6th of December, 2017.
It is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. To move the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Jerusalem, claimed by both Palestinians and Israelis as their capital.
A fierce international backlash to what the president is proposing.
His decision could plunge the region back into a fire with no end.
After President Trump's controversial decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, the Middle East braced itself for violence.
We had 3.5 years of quiet, and then that happened. I thought, that's it, that's another war starting that day.
But in the Palestinian Gaza Strip, a grassroots movement planned a different response. Mass, peaceful demonstrations.
Fluttering Palestinian flags. The world has always criticized our armed resistance, so we said, okay, let's start a new path of peaceful demonstrations. It needs to be inclusive, national, and raise the Palestinian flag, not the flag of any faction.
Weekly protests at Gaza's unofficial border with Israel would culminate in a massive demonstration on the day of the embassy opening, the 14th of May, 2018.
As long as it was peaceful, we would have permitted them to protest. But that's not what happened. A woman being carried on a stretcher.
That day would end with at least 60 Palestinians dead or dying, and almost 3,000 injured.
They are breaking through now. We will not leave the borders until the siege is broken once and for all.
Using footage from the Israeli army, Hamas, journalists, and the protesters themselves, this is the story of that day.
Your life is in your hands. A man wields an axe.
Our brave soldiers are protecting the borders of Israel as we speak today. We salute you all.
How did Gaza's plan for a peaceful demonstration result in one of the worst days of violence in a generation?
Remember this moment. This is history.
Black smoke engulfs a pack of protesters. One day in Gaza. A field of lush grass. Ahmed Abu Artema, Gazan poet. 3 days after Trump's announcement, I went on an evening walk near the separation fence. I looked at the fragility of the fence, at the few meters that prevent us from reaching our land. A mesh fence topped with coils of barbed wire. In Gaza, 70% of the people are refugees. Their towns and villages lie beyond the fence. I noticed the birds moving between the trees and the wires. How easy it is. Birds decide to fly, so they fly. I wrote a post saying, what if 200,000 Palestinian refugees all gathered near the separation fence and said, we want to return to our homes, we just want to live. Everyone grabbed hold of this idea. And within a few days, hundreds of activists and young people began calling for it. And the idea quickly spread across Palestine, especially in Gaza. The rising sun starts to spread its golden glow over a sprawling city. 5 months later, 14th of May, 2018. It's dark, and the shadows of cars and pedestrians fall onto a wall. A young person is sitting on an ornate sofa. The night before, I'd said to myself, we're going in. will cross the fence. We're going in and we'll give them hell. An unshaven man. I got up, I packed my bag, I took water, food, a 12-volt phone charger. Now a woman wearing a niqab. I made stuffed courgettes and aubergines. I fried up some falafel. We brought a shovel and bags of sand. I took cheese, thyme, red peppers. I put on my armour, helmet and gas mask. The first bus that left from the north, I was on it.
On the morning of the 14th of May 2018, thousands of Palestinians began arriving at Gaza's unofficial border. The 14th of May was also the 70th anniversary of the founding of Israel. These weekly protests have been named the Great March of Return. They've become a lightning rod for years of frustration.
To Jerusalem we go, martyrs in the millions.
In 2006, Hamas was elected to power in Gaza and then expelled its rivals. In response, Israel tightened its economic blockade on the region, citing security concerns for strictly controlling all movement of goods and people in and out of the Gaza Strip. Today, the economy is in free fall. More than half of Gaza's 2 million inhabitants live in poverty and rely on aid. And they are prevented from leaving what is one of the most densely populated regions on Earth.
Demonstrators holding up flags.
Most demonstrators stayed far away from the fence and protested peacefully. But in the days leading up to the 14th of May, others had declared that they intended to break Israel's blockade of Gaza by cutting through the fence and confronting Israeli soldiers.
Let the Zionists hear it. Jerusalem is ours. And the land is ours. And God with his might is with us. Israeli soldiers are standing on a mount.
The Israel Defense Forces, or IDF, were preparing for an invasion.
Trees to one side of the fence are cast into silhouette by the rising sun.
Just 2 kilometers away, on the other side of the fence, Israeli grandmother Adele Raymer was recording a video for Facebook Live.
Okay, it's really early in the morning and I'm just taking my morning walk and I see that there's a lot of soldiers here, which there usually aren't. And I look over into our fields and I can see a huge plume of smoke coming from a little bit north of us in Gaza. Something's going on already.
Yeah, it was scary. The Great March of Return. That's what they said they were going to do. The Great March of Return. So that's what I was expecting that could happen, that they could, in the thousands, walk and just knock down the fence.
Everybody's on edge. We've been assured by the army that everything is under control, but we and they are ready for everything.
Grainy footage of the demonstrators in the distance. On the day of the embassy move, we assembled dozens of cameras at the fence. We wanted to capture what happened better than ever before. Colonel Kobi Heller, commander, Gaza's Southern Brigade. We prepared for rioters on a very large scale. One Israeli village is just 250 meters from the fence. If we failed to respond to an incident in time and prevent the infiltration of terrorists, they could reach the villages within 2 or 3 minutes.
Gaza is ruled by Hamas, seen in the West as a terrorist organization. They reject Israel's right to exist and have a history of suicide bombings and rocket attacks against the Jewish state. Israel has fought 3 major conflicts with Hamas, and it believed that these were no longer peaceful protests, but a violent attack on Israel.
I had responsibility for the defense mission under my jurisdiction. to prevent the infiltration and arrival of terrorists on the fence. If they reach our villages, we've failed.
In the run-up to the 14th of May, there'd been many confrontations at the fence. Women would often take the lead.
Asma Abu Daga. We line up like a human shield so the men could advance further. If you're a woman, the world sees you as having no importance. But you do something that they can't, that is pure happiness.
At previous protests, some people had even crossed the fence and entered Israel.
Hanan Abu Jumia. When we wanted to cross the fence, some of us distracted the Israelis with stones and Molotov cocktails. We used scissors and tools to cut it. We entered. And the area inside, it's much nicer than Gaza. I don't know why. Asma Abu Daga. We became friends with Fear, not to make a mockery of our lives, but to show that we are stronger than snipers. That's the message we wanted to send. We're not just throwing our lives away. The message had to be sent. Hanan Abu Jamia. When I go to the wire, I don't care about anyone else. I only know myself. I want to go to the wire and face my enemy. It's an honor to resist the occupation. Security footage of people at the fence.
The fence is monitored by an all-female team of Israeli intelligence officers based in a secret control center in southern Israel.
Lieutenant K, field intelligence officer. We're talking about a fence. That's what separates us, and that's what creates this situation. What's tough about being here? Knowing that not everyone is the enemy. Tens of thousands of people aren't all enemies. We're talking about civilians, that's what's difficult. Mothers and children. I don't want to hurt anyone who's innocent. First, I must protect our villages. But I must also preserve my humanity. To combine those two things, it's complicated. IDF soldiers.
The officers in the war room are in direct communication with forces on the ground and will alert them to anything they regard as suspicious.
The crazy part is who takes responsibility here? Girls, young girls who have so much responsibility in their hands, and combat soldiers who are young as well. They come to the war room and they tell us they're scared. After all, they're kids too.
Since early morning, Israeli forces had taken up position behind the security fence, separating Israel from Gaza. They'd also laid an extra coil of barbed wire to act as a deterrent. About 300 meters away is Jaca Street, a Palestinian road that runs parallel to the fence. Israel regards the area between Jaca Street and the fence as a military no-go zone.
Colonel Kobe Heller, the activity in the area around the fence isn't a civil activity, it's a military area. A loudspeaker announcement. Everybody beside the fence, go back. If you don't turn back, we'll open fire. Moeen Al-Daba. The occupation was saying on speakers that people should not approach the fence, and that if they do, they'll be shot dead. Your life is in your hands. But we wanted to send the message that we still have the right to our land, and we want to return.
70% of people in Gaza are descendants of refugees, Palestinians who fled or were forced to flee their land when Israel was created in 1948 and captured territory in the War of 67. Palestinians across the Middle East have long held that they have a legal right of return to what they see as their homeland. But for most Israelis, the arrival of millions of Palestinians would threaten their country's identity as a Jewish state and pose an existential threat.
Colonel Heller, clearly many people came for a legitimate protest, that's obvious to me, but that wasn't the issue. On a loudspeaker, God willing, we will break through this door. There were sermons by Palestinian religious leaders inciting people against Israel. Break through, you heroes! When the sermon ended, the whole crowd descended on the fence. That's not a protest. It's not a civilian event, it's a military event. And in a military event, you use military tools. A man watching a tire burn is shot in the leg and collapses. Then more shots ring out. An injured man tries to hop away, but people shout at him to keep still.
That day, the IDF would be using live ammunition.
Two more men are shot, and the crowd starts to panic.
Despite the risk of gunfire, hundreds of Palestinians were still determined to cross Jaca Street and head for the fence. Among them were Wissal Halil and her brother Mohammed. Wissal was a regular at the protests and had tried to cut the fence at least once.
Wissal's mother, Reem Abu Umana, after a while she became the sniper's enemy. They would pull the car tires with a wire to act as cover for the young people, so the smoke would protect them from the Israelis. She would always say, "I want to be a martyr." That was her dream. "We will sacrifice our blood and souls for Al-Aqsa." Doa Mazran. Her nickname was the Bank of Stones. She'd always fill her bag with stones for the guys. Mohammed Al-Sheikh Khalil, Wissal's brother. "When I arrived, I saw her by the fence giving stones and water to the guys. I stood next to her for a minute." The protesters.
That morning, Wissal had prayed by the Israeli fence, hung a flag on it, then returned to talk to her friend.
"I was next to her. I was to her right. While she was talking to the girls, she was shot." Footage of Wissal getting shot and collapsing on the ground.
A single gunshot hit Wissal in the head, killing her instantly.
"They carried her to the ambulance. When I told the medic she was my sister, he wouldn't let me go with them. He said I was lying. I ran home. I told my mother and my brothers."
At 14, Wissal was one of the youngest people to be killed that day.
"I never imagined I'd see my son or daughter." Wissal's mother is overcome with emotion. Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus, IDF international media spokesperson, adjusts the beret tucked under his epaulette, then straightens his shirt collar.
"Defending our civilians is non-negotiable. That is our mission. That's what we are deployed to do. That's what we're trained and equipped to do."
What about Wissal Sheikh Khalil, the 14-year-old? How come she was shot in the head?
We've had numerous situations where people have been hit without being the intended target of that specific bullet. It's a very unfortunate situation, something that we would surely, that we surely wouldn't want to have happened. One of the leading, line of thought or assessment, working assumption, would be that it was stray bullets that hit a target and then change direction.
How often do you think that happened?
According to the preliminary information that we have at hand now, that probably has happened a few times.
It's still, so how many is a few?
Difficult to say.
Black smoke pumps into the air from tire fires burning on the Palestinian side of the Gaza Strip.
In the hour after Wissal was killed, more and more people were crossing Jaca Street and getting closer to the fence. Behind the crowd, two brothers had arrived to join the protest.
Ayman al-Wahhab. I just wanted to stand there to express myself. I was excited. I wasn't expecting anything bad to happen.
Ayman and his brother Abdel Salam are both descendants of refugees. In 1948, their father had fled the city of Ashdod in what is now Israel. Today, it is almost impossible for them to visit.
Move forward. They've crossed over.
Suddenly, the crowd surged forward. A rumor was spreading that protesters were about to breach the fence. For Ayman and his brother, this was a rare chance to step beyond the Gaza Strip.
Keep moving, my brothers. Maybe there was a feeling that I could actually go back to my homeland and just see it for a moment and then come back home. That was how I felt anyway.
The people at the front were filming on their phones, believing they were about to be part of an historic event. But as the crowd swelled, Israeli forces released a barrage of tear gas. They then opened fire with live ammunition.
Somebody got hit. Somebody got shot. They're shooting. People are getting hit. Here's another injury. We have three injuries here. Now there's four. Here's another. He's shot in his back.
In the chaos, Ayman and his brother had been separated.
I saw a lot of injuries and people being carried on stretchers. It's natural to want to help. So I ran over to help. And when I got to them, he squeezes his hands together. I found Abdel Salam, shot.
Abdel Salam had also been shot in the head.
He's his brother. Your brother? What's his name?
He died in hospital later that day.
Chaotic footage of Abdel Salam being put into an ambulance, then a photograph of the two brothers. He had nothing on him. Neither of us did. If you shoot at someone's head, you intend to kill, not to scare or deter. These people are not combatants. They're unarmed. How could someone open fire like that? Colonel Heller. As a rule, every sniper fired under orders from his commander, the most senior commander available, as a rule. But in a situation like this, where we identified mass attempts to infiltrate, the snipers needed to use their own judgment and respond quickly.
Abdel Salam wasn't the first brother that Ayman had lost in the conflict. 16 years earlier, another brother, Ahmed, had been killed by Israeli forces while taking part in a military operation with Al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of Hamas. Ayman says that neither he nor Abdel Salam had any involvement with armed groups. But for the IDF, the whole protest was regarded as a Hamas operation.
Hella, Hamas tried to incite the crowd to infiltrate Israel, seemingly towards Jerusalem. The Gazan population, certainly in these protests, are the victims here. They are the poor ones. Everything is operated by Hamas. 6 weeks earlier, the peaceful protests.
Trump's announcement that he would move the US embassy to Jerusalem had been the catalyst for peaceful protests at the fence. Organized by a grassroots movement, at first, they weren't aligned with any political or armed groups.
Moin al-Daba. For a month, the marches had been led by civilians. Then I was surprised that the committee of the Great March of Return began to change. There were different factions involved, each running activities. This march is the beginning of our return to all the land of Palestine.
As the protests grew more popular, leaders of groups like Hamas and Islamic Jihad, both regarded by Israel as terrorist organizations, started touring the sites and rallying the crowds.
If they starve because of the siege, they will eat the livers of their besiegers.
Over time, these leaders began to exert increasing control over what was now known as the Great March of Return.
We will not leave the borders until the siege is broken. We will rip up the borders. We will rip out their hearts with fear and panic.
I know for a fact that most of the people in Gaza are not Hamas, like militant Hamas. Having said that, when the Hamas get up at their rallies, they say, we're gonna go into Israel, rip out their hearts. I mean, this is rhetoric that you can't just ignore.
Halil al-Haya, Hamas deputy leader Gaza, takes a seat opposite an interviewer.
Given that Israel regards you as a terrorist organisation, why couldn't Hamas have just stayed out of all of this? I mean, why not just let the people do their thing?
First of all, it is unfair to describe an organisation resisting occupation as terrorist. The world needs to reconsider these classifications. The presence of the factions in the marches, spearheaded by Hamas, makes them safer because they need to be organised. People can't just march on their own. They need leadership to guide them. Khaled al-Bach, Islamic Jihad leader, Gaza. Who will provide their buses? The angels in heaven? Who will set up the tents on the ground? Angels in heaven? Who will supply sanitation to the people? We pursued this method despite the fact that we have an armed resistance. But we wanted to test this type of popular and peaceful struggle. If the international community doesn't help to end our suffering, we'll have to stop. And then the alternative options will become a priority. On the arid ground alongside the fence, a line of men prepare to pray.
As noon prayers came to an end on the 14th of May, a new wave of people flowed out of the mosques to join the protests at the border.
Israel to hell! Occupation, leave! Leave!
It was fast becoming one of the biggest public demonstrations in Gaza for a generation.
Our rebels are now pulling the wire.
Despite the rising death toll, people were still being urged to come.
We had intelligence a few days prior to the 14th that Hamas were planning to breach the fence by a rather simple but what would seem an effective plan. The first wave would be civilians using civilians as cover in order for a second wave of trained operatives to breach inside and then hopefully from their point of view take one of the soldiers with them and drag them back to the Gaza Strip.
Across Gaza, buses were provided by Hamas and others to transport demonstrators to the protest sites on the border.
Intasar Abu Hassanein, The buses picked us up from the mosque. The mosques were directing the buses where to go.
Intisar was told that her bus was heading for Gaza's main protest site. But in fact, protest organizers were taking her somewhere else.
It was a military area with rough terrain, completely exposed.
They'd brought her to an unofficial site near a graveyard with little cover and no medical facility. It was also right next to a Hamas military training area.
I was angry. We'd never been to this place before. It was scary. The women were shouting, "This is a rough area. Why have you brought us here? It's the first time you've brought us here." They said, "It's been decided that today everyone will stay here." After that, buses were dropping more people off, and the broadcasting van told us to walk ahead. "Oh, children of Gaza, oh, freedom fighters, come forward, paradise is calling."
As hundreds more people arrived, four paramedics were dispatched to the area. By chance, one of them was Intisar's son, Musa.
I saw him from a distance. I went over to hug him. He told his friend, "My mother's here. Let me take a picture with her, as a souvenir for her." The photograph of Intisar and her son. He knew the situation we were in was dangerous.
Musa was a paramedic in Gaza's civil defense force, part of the Hamas Ministry of the Interior. With no field hospitals in the area, he was one of the only medics in a crowd of hundreds.
"Move forward. They've crossed over. Come on, guys. Go forward." Bada Salah. I'm not one for fighting or burning tires, but when I went, I was convinced by it. The revolutionary songs excite you. They encourage you to rip an Israeli's head off.
24-year-old Badr had also been bussed in that day. He'd never attended a protest before.
I was really close to the fence and I could see this Israeli soldier with his gun. I could even see what type of gun he was carrying. "We won't retreat for a bullet or two."
Eyewitnesses say at least two armed Palestinians stood aside from the crowd and began firing on Israeli soldiers.
The crowd rejoiced. Badr. I saw a guy with a pistol and a guy with an AK-47. He fired two shots to scare the Israelis. People duck as shots ring out. When they opened fire, the Israelis went crazy. "Get down!" They were shooting randomly and aggressively, so we all ducked down.
The IDF have provided this infrared video footage that they say shows shots being fired at Israeli soldiers and IEDs being detonated. It was all being monitored from the IDF war room a few miles away.
Lieutenant K, we heard on the radio that our soldiers were under pressure. The forces on the ground were having a shootout with 15 to 20 people who were shooting at our forces at close range. There were lots of explosions, lots of black smoke. It was chaos, total mayhem. At the end of the day, we all know how it ended.
The IDF fired back for 40 minutes.
A stampede, then someone shouting, "Get medics for God's sake!" Badr. Someone would be screaming their leg was hit, others were shouting that they were dying. There was all this shouting and confusion. People were dying and bleeding, fire everywhere. It was a massacre.
Musa was one of only four medics treating the wounded.
When Musa was going to treat people, he told me to get down on the ground, but I chased after him.
Whilst he was treating three casualties and wearing a paramedic's vest, he was shot through the chest. With his mother by his side, he lay bleeding for over 25 minutes before his colleagues were able to evacuate him.
None of the ambulances are able to reach here. Let's just carry him, guys.
At the hospital, he was declared dead on arrival.
Intasar is weeping over her son's medic vest. I keep it because it smells of him. And because he was wearing it the day he died.
21 people were killed at the graveyard that afternoon. At least 8 of them were alleged members of Al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of Hamas. 2 of them were children. No Israelis were hurt. The Hamas leadership denies they sanctioned a military operation that day, but admits that Palestinians opened fire.
What did happen at the graveyard?
Halil al-Haya. It was a voluntary act by some civilians. As you know, many Palestinians have weapons. This was an individual act by some citizens, and it was wrong. Our Palestinian people are politicized, and we're a politicized people because we're under occupation. It doesn't matter if they were Hamas or not. My question is, were Israeli soldiers harmed by this act from within a Palestinian crowd? Were they harmed? No, unfortunately they weren't. As soon as the occupation heard a little bang, they used it as an excuse to kill many protesters.
The guidance to the soldiers by commanders on the ground was be proportionate, be precise, be professional. Remember that you're defending civilians behind you, but also remember that you are to use your weapons only when necessary and only in a situation where we don't have any other means of stopping somebody from posing a threat. We defended our civilians and we upheld our sovereignty and we denied Hamas any significant military claim.
An ambulance speeds along a sand track with its lights flashing.
The injured were being evacuated to the hospitals in the cities. But by mid-afternoon, they were overwhelmed. The Ministry of Health called on citizens to give blood and declared a medical emergency. Jamie McGoldrick from the UN had been monitoring the situation from his office in Gaza City.
Reports from the various news outlets were saying 50 people, 30 people. The number's growing, and we could see at some point it was starting to mount quite significantly, and we knew there was a delay in that as well. And it was that point in time we realised that we had to go there and see if there was any support further that we could do and give. You couldn't drive in because they'd cut this area up into the triage area. So this flow was appearing in bigger numbers. People who are tending to wounded, tending to people being brought in on stretchers.
Take him inside, doesn't matter where.
The more severely wounded were taken inside to the emergency area and it was getting log jammed. The doctors were running around because they had never seen this number in this way.
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar!
Patients were everywhere. They were in the corridors, they were in the outpatient clinics, in the pediatric ward, in the gynecology ward, lying everywhere. We tried to stop bleeding for some patients in the corridors. Patients were shouting on the other side. Patients were standing in queues to enter the OT rooms to have their operation done, life-saving operations. Some of them died waiting there. And you're not speaking about 10 patients. 20 patients. You are speaking about 1,000 patients at one day having live gunshot injuries.
with a hospital with a capacity with 3 beds, and another hospital with 6 beds, and another hospital with 5 beds, in total 40 beds with 1,000 injuries. That's, you do the calculation.
Doctors would discover that over a period of 8 hours that day, the IDF shot over 1,000 Palestinians, an average of one person every 30 seconds. Most of these people were shot in the leg.
Bones turn to dust. It's like an epidemic or an outbreak of gunshots. When you say an outbreak of a disease, it's an outbreak of gunshots. It's unusual.
At 3:30, Gaza's health ministry reported that 37 Palestinians had been killed and over 1,700 injured.
Bashir Faraj, how would you feel if your countrymen were being shot? How do you think I felt? He who doesn't revolt is not from Palestine. Scenes of pandemonium.
So far, not a single protester had crossed into Israel. The crowds rallied for a final push.
My goal was to cut the wire and go in. I'm telling you now, it was peaceful. But right then, it wasn't peaceful. Bilal Muhanna, we were moving forward bit by bit. I wanted to get right to the front to film the guys who'd reached the fence. Man down. The further we went forward, the more brutality we saw, and the targeting was direct. We didn't have time to film all the men who were falling. Even in the heat of the moment, people were chatting, getting to know each other. Where are you from? What's your family name? Meanwhile, bullets were whizzing past. Seriously, I don't think you can understand it unless you were there. Bashir Faraj, I was hoping to kill a soldier, even if I lost my life. If I caught a soldier and didn't have a sharp tool on me, I'd kill him with my teeth. A coil of barbed wire is dragged through the crowd. My job was to carry a sandbag or two and move forward 5 or 10 meters. And lay them down. Then others go forward, lay down tires and set them alight. We did this until we reached the fence. To a group of men at the fence, guys, go in, go in. Shall I just go in like a commando? Go in. A young man goes in and he goes through and there's no way. No way. Another guy climbed up the fence and hung the Palestinian flag. He was shouting, God is great, God is great. They shot him. He fell on our side, covered in blood. We just carry on. We weren't afraid of the blood. We weren't afraid that his leg was torn apart like this. Why not? We had no fear. The adrenaline inside you was full. We were running towards the wire, dodging left and right, and I was hit by the treacherous bullet. And the bullet of pride. Hela, as long as he's classified as a terrorist, the guidelines are simple. If we identify a person that systematically goes back and forth, that's not the act of a citizen. It's a military action to hit our infrastructure and hurt our soldiers. When we identified a trend, a main instigator who riles up the crowd, controlling the event from within, then we authorize a sniper to shoot him in the leg to make sure he doesn't come back.
So it was allowed to shoot someone to prevent them from coming to the fence. Is that right?
When we identify the same people going back and forth repeatedly, adults, not children, not women, adults, we behave in a military way. The guidelines were to shoot them in the legs.
As a result of being shot, Bashir's leg was amputated above the knee. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, he's one of 17 people to lose a limb after being injured on May the 14th.
It's okay to lose my leg for Palestine. Palestine gave us life, and we owe our lives to Palestine. It's our duty. A temple with a gold dome.
As 4 o'clock approached, crowds and dignitaries gathered in Jerusalem for the official opening ceremony of the new US embassy.
If ever there was a vision of two distinct realities when it comes to this conflict, it is here today over the official recognition of Israel's capital.
Here in the embassy compound, the Israelis are jubilant.
And for this joyous celebration, a high-powered American delegation, nearly the entire Israeli cabinet.
There was a sense of the gravitas of the moment. There was a solemnity to it, almost a religious cast to it. For myself as a Jew, you know, waiting basically for this moment for 2,000 years, as an Israeli waiting for this moment for 70 years, having basically fought for this moment, not just in the army, but fought for this moment in diplomacy, it was a moment of great fulfillment for me. There was a sense of being in the moment of history.
On behalf of the 45th President of the United States of America, we welcome you officially and for the first time to the Embassy of the United States here in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Thank you.
Michael Oren.
I went over to interview at a bank of cameras representing the international media, and found myself being interviewed not so much about the ceremony, but rather about what was happening in Gaza.
We're told 25 people now dead. How does that impact what's happening today?
Well, it's not going to impact in any way the jubilation that you see going on behind us. We've waited for this moment, as I said, for many, many years.
The narrative is going to go out there that while Israel was celebrating this event,
Israeli soldiers were accused of firing wantonly and indiscriminately at peaceful demonstrators. No Hamas. No attempt to break through the border. No sense that our people were in danger of imminent massacre. And it began to sink in that the ceremony, the inauguration ceremony, would be marshaled as evidence against us.
It is now my great honor to call upon the Prime Minister of the State of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu.
The dignitaries applaud as Netanyahu takes the stage.
Dear friends, the embassy of the most powerful nation on earth, our greatest ally, the United States of America, today its embassy opened here.
He gets a standing ovation.
We are in Jerusalem and we are here to stay. We are here in Jerusalem protected by the brave soldiers of the Army of Israel. Our brave soldiers are protecting the borders of Israel as we speak today. We salute them all of you. What a glorious day. Remember this moment. This is history.
He gets another ovation as black smoke fills the sky above the border. On the ground, fires blaze as men and women stand in separate groups. Moin al-Daba. I heard an announcement that the embassy had been moved. Felt sick to my stomach. I was so shocked that they'd done it. I shivered inside. And not just me. everyone did. The crowd raged. They approached the fence and were shot at. There were dozens of injuries at the time of the embassy move. An injured man is carried away on a horse-drawn cart. A woman is borne on a stretcher, while another man is carried by friends. There weren't enough ambulances. It's full, there's no space. Go to another ambulance. I was standing next to an ambulance which took six people all piled on top of each other. Some were injured and some were dead. Rami Abu Assi. At this time, the drone came and started dropping gas. Gas canisters streaked through the sky, leaving a trail of white smoke. The gas didn't just reach me and the paramedics. It reached the tents at the back and even reached the field hospitals where people were being treated. People suffering the effects of the gas. Someone come over here, quick! A doctor is on the verge of collapse as patients start to have fits in response to the gas. My face is burning. Mum! Mum! People were smashing their bodies on the ground. Others were screaming because of the gas. A wild-eyed man attempts to fight off the staff trying to help him, saying, I don't know you. Who are you? This happened around sunset. Get him inside, quick. I was one of the people affected by this gas. Someone look after this guy. I don't remember what happened after that. A teenage boy, his eyes wide with fear, is held down on a mattress. Smoke continues to drift across the strip, but the crowds have dispersed somewhat, and those making their way along a track on foot cast long shadows.
With the death toll still rising, Hamas and the protest organizers called an end to the day's demonstrations.
Bilal Muhanna. They just started announcing that the protests on the 14th of May were over. We will return. We will return. We felt it was too early. People were still participating. Morale was high. Honestly, we didn't want the day to end like that. A man sitting on a trailer being pulled by a donkey. Then three women wearing niqabs. Moin al-Daba. I felt deeply frustrated. The people planned something, but the opposite happened. The plan for 14th of May was to cross over, right? But we didn't cross over. We expected to stop the embassy moving, but it was moved. There were dozens of attempts to cross, but in the end we failed, because each attempt ended in killings and injuries. There was no need for what happened that day. Security footage, then Colonel Heller. The mission was to stop the terrorists and the rioters on the fence and to prevent them from crossing and penetrating the State of Israel. As a military man, we accomplished this mission, and we did it very well. Departing protesters.
By the end of the 14th of May 2018, at least 60 Palestinians were dead or dying, and over 2,700 were injured. One Israeli was hurt. Hamas later claimed more than 50 of the dead as their own.
You have 60,000 people there, around 60 get killed. 52 of them are Hamas.
All right, that is actually the Israeli army exercising tremendous restraint in the face of a dire security threat.
The paramedic, Musa Abu Hassanin, was one of the dead claimed by Hamas. Palestinians say that, like most of the dead, he had nothing to do with the organization's armed wing and was posing no threat to Israel when he was shot.
He was doing his job, a paramedic. Are they there to participate or to fight? No, they're just doing their job. Musa laid out on a stretcher.
Civilians who participated in these riots paid an unfortunate price. And what's really sad is that it doesn't seem as if Hamas has changed its strategy or is thinking of doing anything else.
Jonathan Conricus. Halil Al-Haya. We will continue our struggle with all available means. Firm, military, peaceful, legal, political, and diplomatic. We didn't expect the occupation to kill so many people, but we always said, if the occupation does that, then it will embarrass itself in front of the world and show its true face.
We did not understand. Israel didn't understand this enough, that the protester, the rioter in Gaza, is the new missile. If they're shot, rioters, if they're shot, they inflame public opinion in the world much better than rocket fire does. And this was proof of it.
Michael Oren. Lieutenant K. A fence made of metal. It drives me crazy. I feel like I'm living their lives, like I know them. A fence made of metal, less than 1 centimeter thick, but different worlds, completely different worlds. A UN investigation into the protests in Gaza in 2018 accused Israeli soldiers of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Israel's government said the report was hostile, false, and biased. As the first anniversary of May 14th approached, Hamas and other militant groups launched over 600 rockets from Gaza, killing 4 Israelis. Israel responded with airstrikes and targeted assassinations, killing at least 22 Palestinians. Palestinians in Gaza continue to protest every Friday.